Gentrification is not a new story here in Seattle. KUOW's growth and development reporter Joshua McNichols told us earlier this week how some people in South Seattle are dealing with gentrification in their neighborhoods. Some of them are seeking out the help of Pedro Gomez with Seattle's Office of Economic Development. Gomez helps people who might get pushed out of a gentrifying neighborhood stay by starting their own small business. He's got his own experience with entrepreneurship, starting when he was about 8 years old.
I grew up working in the farms in California, in Oregon, Washington. We grew up as migrant farm workers. And in Fresno, California, there was a point where the governor of that state passed a law where kids weren't allowed to work on the fields anymore. So my parents, they couldn't pay for a babysitter, so they brought us to the fields anyway, and that's the case a lot of times of why farm workers will bring their kids to the fields is because they can't really hire babysitters. So they bring them and then you put them to work, might as well. So I couldn't work on the fields anymore, but we had to figure out how can I still be productive while I'm there. So my parents bought me a wagon and a big cooler, filled it up with sodas and water, and I would go around the field selling sodas and water to the farm workers. And there was a little radio, and I would sing songs. And I was competing with the taco trucks that were there to serve the farm workers. And I would lower my prices sometimes just to compete with them, you know. And so that's a funny story of how I first started getting into the whole business world, you know. But
you were learning about bartering. You were learning about, okay, what do I have? That's okay, radio, singing. That's a hook. That's different.
Yep. I've always been a huge fan of a Mexican group called Los Tigres del Norte, which I just got to see for the first time last weekend. And in their music, they talk about the struggle of the immigrant and the struggle of being a farm worker and all that. And those are the songs I would sing when I was in the fields, and it would attract customers, you know.
Eventually, you ended up in Walla Walla.
Eventually, we ended up in Walla Walla, and we just got to work in the fields and picking onions, apples, everything. We started noticing that the families we came into that labor camp were getting their homes already. We're moving out of the labor camp. We were one of the last families from our group of people that came into that labor camp. So what can we do to bring in extra dough? And we started getting creative. My sister was really good at doing hair, my older sister. So she started charging, you know, or doing hair for women getting married, to young ladies going having their quinceañera, and she would do their hair. My other sister,
15th birthday.
Yeah, the 15th birthday. My other sister is a great dancer, so she would teach dance. My brother's a great artist. He would make art pieces, tattoo drawings. And I was sort of just the orchestrator, right? Like the manager, just managing these things. But tamales seemed like a really easy thing to do. We make them every Christmas and sometimes other parts of the year when we just have that craving. And teachers started asking for them at school. You know, I would bring them for lunch. That was my lunch. Everybody else was eating meatloaf and all these other things, and I was eating tamales. You know, someone asked for they could buy some, and then that's just kind of where the light bulb went off in my head, and how we transitioned into that. And meanwhile, we were doing all these other things too, but it was out of that desire to want to have our own home.
Did you adapt your tamales to the market?
Oh, definitely. We made them less spicy because people couldn't handle the spiciness that we were making. So yeah, we adapted them and the other way we adapted them was we raised the prices a little bit. We first started just doing $10 a dozen, and we started realizing like we could probably charge more because they're going to be willing to pay it, and we raised probably a little bit more than double the price on them. But it was, and that's sort
of. People want less spice and they'll pay more money.
Exactly. And sometimes that's how the funny part of business.
What's the number one thing people who want to start a small business that they don't understand?
Raising capital, having a lot of people don't realize how much money it actually takes to start a business. And so it takes a lot of getting creative, right? If it's somebody that wants to do a full-blown restaurant, well, maybe we'll start with a truck first or something, right? Or maybe, or you know, it's getting them to think creatively because raising that capital is a tough piece. But even just one thing I've been really surprised about over the last few years that I've been working with small business owners is that a lot of people know their product, know what they're selling. They know how to cook whatever. They know how to cut hair, but they don't really understand how to run a business and how to grow year after year over year, you know, and or don't even have that goal of really growing year over year, you know. And that's the thing. And the more I talk to business owners, the more I realize it's not that uncommon that a business owner knows their product, knows how to run, you know, how to do what they do, but doesn't necessarily know marketing or how to run a business, you know, just the basics.
Give us an idea the range of small business entrepreneurs in Seattle. Who are you dealing with?
Yesterday I met with a photographer, and we're dealing with people who have who are physical coaches, you know, they want to have a gym. We're dealing with restaurant owners, barbers. We're dealing with coffee shop owners. We're dealing with bicycle repair folks, all kinds.
We started out talking about taking advantage of the new people coming into a gentrifying neighborhood with money to spend, mm-hmm. and you've got it. You've got some expertise, and these are your clients. Right. What do you tell people who they've got an expertise, their neighborhood is changing, new people are coming in? How do they adapt?
Well, part of it is part of running a business is knowing your clientele. Right. So if you have a new set of people coming in, is let's figure out who these people are, what they like.
What's an example of that?
Well, there's a restaurant in South Park that I'm working with. And she, the owner, her and her husband, you know, they've kind of always served the same people. And there hasn't been too much growth. But little by little, there's the Boeing workers are starting to kind of peak into South Park as an option for lunch, right? And how do you take advantage of that, right? How do you attract these folks? You know, sometimes you have to get really creative, and maybe you reach out to Boeing, right? But you know, that's one small example. Just as Boeing continues to grow, you know, your neighbor Georgetown over here is getting a lot of business. Why aren't you? What are you doing differently, right? And so it's looking at those things and getting creative so that you're taking advantage of that clientele as well.
Is it ever awkward, that dance with a business person and new clientele who's just starting to check out the neighborhood?
Yeah, it is awkward. You know, there's a lot of pride in it, right? You have pride in the product you're serving, right? In this case, food, right? In this case, let's say it was tamales and we continued doing tamales or something. And for you to change those recipes, it's not always easy to just say, well, let me sell it to this new type of person who enjoys it a different way, right? Because now it's not real Mexican food, right? But I guess maybe that's the ugly side of business. In order to make some profit is change your product a little bit and adapt to the customer. And sometimes that means you have to let go of whatever you were doing before. But that's part of business.
So we're talking about somebody who's trying to make a living, having to change what they do and maybe what they love. What responsibility does the newcomer, the gentrifier, have?
To be a good neighbor. You know, get to know where you're moving into. Understand that there are people that are being kicked out, people that are having to leave and don't have a choice, right? And you're occupying now a space that a family might have been at before, and now you've sort of taken it over, I'm sure with not bad intentions, right? Because I'm not saying these people are bad people, right? They got a job in a city and they wanted to live in a certain place, and so they did it. But be conscious of the neighborhood you're moving into, its history, and support the mom and pop shops there, the people that have been there already. Because at the end of the day, we're all going to benefit from it.
That's Pedro Gomez, who works in Seattle's Office of Economic Development. We're tweeting out a link to our Growth and Development reporter Joshua McNichol's story about how neighbors are handling gentrification in South Seattle now. So join us on Twitter at KUOW.